So, good morning everybody. Hi. Welcome to another lecture on compact star physics. So the last time we talked about the Einstein equation and the one and first analytic solution to the Schwarzschild metric to the Einstein equations. And today we're going ahead and we'll couple it to matter. Before we're doing that, any questions about the last lectures? I've seen they are already online, right? So I will. Has everybody found the video lectures online? You know how to find it? Nodding? Good. Good. Anyway, I will put a link onto the web page. Yeah, questions?
A term that I don't understand exactly. What it means is a flat space time of gravity.
A flat space time?
Space time of gravity.
A flat space-time of gravity.
In this sense, because a flat space-time for me itself is already something, but of gravity.
So, in which context?
In the Einstein equivalence principle, that the experiment is the same either in a freely falling frame or in a flat space-time of gravity.
Ah, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So okay. So the question was about what is meant with a flat space time of gravity.
Yes.
So you can have a flat space time without gravity, without matter, so to say. And if you have matter, of course, then you're falling onto the Earth as an astronaut,
yes,
for example. And then we're also talking about flat space time. So how does so you have to think about locally. So locally, the astronaut sees it's flat. Space-time is flat. It's just falling freely without any force.
Yes.
But globally, of course, he is in curved space-time.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Then it makes
sense. So GR still has to recover special relativity in the limit of small space-time regions.
Okay. Then
it makes sense. Okay. Any other question? No? Okay. Let's go with the full equation of state, full Einstein equation. So, yeah, So you discussed already in the last time also a new concept. This is we discussed that the Ricci tensor is basically a measure of curvature in space-time. So without gravity or no matter, if there's no matter, then we set on mu nu is equal to zero. So now we see if you want to describe matter, we also need a tensor which has a rank 2. Yeah? And it's also symmetric in the indices. So we need to find a matter tensor which has those properties. Yeah? You recall the Laplace equation where we had basically the second derivative of the gravitational potential is equal to mass distribution. Yeah? So now we need basically the mass and energy distribution of all there is in space-time in the form of a tensor. And you probably know that tensor already, right? What is this tensor? How is this tensor called? Right, the energy momentum tensor. So matter is described then by T mu nu, which is the energy momentum tensor. Yeah. And basically, how does it come about? So you have to think basically about the following concept that T mu nu is in a heuristic manner is somehow corresponds to a product of four vectors as a tensor. And this is just the four momentum, right? So gravity couples to energy and momentum, so to the four vector, P mu. But it also couples to how this matter is flowing in a certain direction. And the flow of matter is described then by a second vector. Yeah. So basically, it's this concept that we have this four momentum, where now d mu is the four momentum. And then the product over all particles basically gives the energy momentum tensor. One can also describe this in terms of an going now from a particle picture to an ideal fluid. And for an ideal fluid, we have the following quantities. Ideal fluid means we have what kind of quantities describe an ideal fluid or hydrodynamics.
What has no viscosity or something
like that? Yeah, I just want to know the physical observables or the physical variables we have to describe an ideal fluid.
Entropy,
yes. What else? We have thermodynamic quantities.
Pressure.
Volume.
Pardon me?
Volume.
Volume.
Isn't that like in the ideal?
Yeah, we need also volume. Yeah. Okay. Ideal fluid, what else do we have? Pressure, which describes an ideal fluid.
Temperature.
Yes.
Surface density, Oberflächenspannung.
Surface tension. But this is, okay, this is too complicated, so we leave our surface tension. No, ideal fluid means basically it's homogeneous, no viscosity, no heat transfer, no conductivity, or anything like this. No shear viscosity, bulk viscosity.
Divergentless,
right? Now, what else do we have? We had entropy, temperature, we need energy density, right?
Also homogeneous, probably.
Pardon me?
Is the energy density also homogeneous?
Yes, for an ideal fluid, yes. So we have these two quantities are enough, and the rest we get from thermodynamic relations. So pressure energy density is enough, first instances. And then, what else do we have to make a tensor out of these quantities? These seem to be scalar quantities, right? So we need, in addition, we need also the metric tensor to get the index structure right. Yeah? And in addition, we can have the four momentum, or in other terms, as we don't have a specific mass described to particles, we don't take the four momentum, we take the four velocity instead. Yeah, so we have, this is the four velocity of the fluid. Yeah, and this describes hydrodynamics, an ideal fluid where we have no other quantities like shear, bulk viscosity, or heat conductivity. And now we can just try to match those quantities so it has the structure of this energy momentum tensor. And it turns out that it has to be like this. So T, I put it up now with upper index. T mu nu is the energy density plus the pressure. So this is the pressure, not the four momentum. And times the product of the four vectors. This reminds of this up here. And to get the overall structure right, we have a pressure times g mu nu here. And why do we have? Question? Yeah?
The g mu nu, do we have to be up or down?
Oh, good question, yeah. Up or down? Up, yes, of course. So a mistake from my side. Thanks. Very observant. And why do we have this structure? So if this four vector at rest, how does this four vector at rest look like? So if matter is not moving, basically you would think u mu is zero. It's not zero, of course. And we're thinking about the three velocity zero, but the zero component, of course, is not zero for the four velocity. And by normalizing that vector, basically at rest, this four velocity at rest looks like this at rest. Yeah, by proper normalizing it.
Then, it moves in time.
Then we have a time-like vector because everything moves time-like, causal. So at rest, we can easily see that this ball has to boil down in the following form that we now have T mu nu in diagonal form. So it's diagonal form where we have for the zero, zero component, we have energy density plus pressure. Yeah, there should be a minus sign somewhere. And we have because of the metric convention, we have a minus sign here. So the pressure cancels. So we have the energy density. And then this is zero. And this then gives the pressure along this time for the space-like components. Oops. So that's the structure we have at rest. energy density and the pressure in the 1, 1, 2, 2, and the 3, 3 component.
Yes? Why do we use the last part lower indices and not the upper ones? Or is it not so important?
It is important because if we shift index from up to down, we have to multiply with the metric tensor and we would get the metric function in. So one needs, has to be careful. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And then we need energy momentum conservation. Energy momentum conservation basically means that the derivative of the energy momentum tensor vanishes. Yeah. So conservation of energy and momentum. And momentum. So if you have flat space time, it would be the partial derivative is equal to zero. I'm using Einstein summation conventions. So the time derivative times t zero nu plus the spatial derivative times t I nu is equal to zero. Yeah, so that's in flat space time. And of course, you can guess how it looks like in general space time. So in GR, generally, then we have to replace the partial derivative with the covariant derivative. So we have delta mu t mu nu is equal to zero. Okay, so I should write down what pressure and energy density is. So this is the pressure. And this is the energy density. Good. So now, great. So we can, in principle, just say R mu nu is equal to T mu nu. But this doesn't work with energy momentum conservation. And the reason being that the covariant derivative of R mu nu, now I'll write it with, did I do it with upper index? Yep. Is equal a half times D mu. G mu nu r is equal a half times delta mu. Oops, sorry, G mu nu is missing. G mu nu covariant derivative of r. Okay, so it turns out if you calculate this on the left hand side, you get basically out that this is the covariant derivative of the Ricci scalar. So it's not zero in general. So it doesn't fulfill. If you put it equal, it doesn't fulfill then the constraint we have from energy momentum conservation. However, we see from this construction immediately what kind of tensor we need to have that its covariant derivative vanishes. Right? So we just put this to the other side. And then we have delta mu, r mu nu, minus a half g mu nu r is equal to zero, and this is the Einstein tensor g mu nu. Yeah, and for the Einstein tensor, you have already derived all the components for the Schwarzschild metric, so we can use it later on to solve it for neutron stars or compact stars in general. So we can write down now the Einstein equation for matter. So the Einstein equation for matter is G mu nu is proportional to T mu nu. And we need some coefficient here. And of course, we need Newton's constant here, or the gravitational constant G has to appear here. And it turns out that to get the proper limit in the Newtonian case, there's an 8 pi appearing in front. and I'm using natural units, so C is put equal to 1 in this case. So this is the Einstein equation. Yeah, so very simple. Okay. Good. So let's pause for a while. Any questions so far?
How did you arrive at the Einstein equation? I just missed it.
Just by heuristic argument. So I just say matter tells space-time how to curve, and space-time tells matter how to move. This is a famous saying from John Wheeler. So there's a one-to-one correspondence between curvature and matter distribution.
Okay. And yeah? H I so times G is just like a constant linking them together.
Yeah. So 8 pi G is the constant linking them together, which comes from the fact that in a Newtonian limit, we have to discover Newton's law. Mm-hmm. So therefore, the G appears and 8 pi appears. Any other question? Yeah?
Is the Ricci tensor the one associated usually with the curvature? Because we have, I actually like the Ricci tensors, the Christoffel symbols, the Ricci scala, and Riemann tensor, they are all related with curvature in some sense, right? Which one is the real curvature of this space?
So the question was, what is the real curvature tensor of space-time? In principle, it's the Riemann tensor with the four indices.
Okay.
But in GR, in GR we only take the Ricci tensor.
Uh-huh. Okay. But could you say that the Einstein tensor also is the curvature?
Yeah, yeah, because it's a combination of the Ricci tensor and the Ricci scalar. So in general, I would say the Einstein tensor is the one we need. We can also, in vacuum, we can already write down the equation, the Einstein equation in vacuum would be G mu nu is equal to zero, which is equivalent actually to R mu nu is equal to zero.
Ah, okay. Mm-hmm. But from a geometric point of view, in geometry, in curved space times, which is the one usually used?
Which is the one usually used? That's the Einstein tensor.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, any other question? Good. So, and we're quickly coming to the Tolman-Oppenheimer-Volkoff equation. Yeah, so now we want to solve that equation in a simple space-time. So we take a spherical space-time, static one, and look for solutions. And that solutions, they have a name. These are the Tolman-Oppenheimer-Volkoff equations. So this goes, I think I already mentioned that, though this goes back to the textbook by Tolman in 1934, and then two papers which appeared back to back in 1939. So there was a paper then in Physical Review by Tolman, 1939, and by Oppenheimer and Volkoff. Okay. So.
He published two papers.
This is a textbook. And these are two journal articles. So we're looking at static spherical symmetric spacetime. And there's an important theorem which is heavily used here, and this is Birkhoff's theorem. Has anybody heard about Birkhoff's theorem before? Maybe from the GR lecture? No? Yeah? Yeah? Okay. Good. So any spherical symmetric solution of the Einstein equation has to be static, is the statement of Birkhoff's theorem, and must be, is given by the Schwarzschild metric. So any spherical symmetric solution, symmetric solution of Einstein's equation is static, asymptotically flat, and given by the Schwarzschild metric. Or in short, is given by the Schwarzschild metric. In vacuum, any similar solution of Einstein equation is given. Schwarzschild metric in vacuum. So now if we look at static spherical, so it means also that this is static actually, right? And later we will see it is static because we don't find any quadrupole moment in this distribution, so we cannot produce, for example, gravitational waves which are propagating outwards, which would give a time dependence. So this is a static solution. Static. This means also if you look at a sphere of matter in space-time and look at the outside solution. The outside solution is in vacuum, and by Birkhoff's theorem, the outside solution must be Schwarzschild metric and is static. Yeah. So we have the sphere. So this means solution outside of the sphere of matter is Schwarzschild. So we have to map basically the interior solution to the outside Schwarzschild solution. Is Schwarzschild. Is the Schwarzschild metric. Okay. Good. So we can make the following ansatz for the metric. So we say that ds squared is the metric, and we only look at diagonal components. We have a spherical symmetric solution, so we have no angular dependence, and the solution due to Birkhoff's theorem should not depend on time to match onto the static solution outside of the sphere. So it depends only on the radius r. So we have two functions. So one function in front of dt squared we have to fill in, and another function in front of dr squared right? And then we have the usual element from the angles, but this is just one. Yeah? So we don't have any dependence here. So we have two functions which are independent of each other in the ansatz. And for convenience, one usually denotes them in exponential form, just to simplify the equations later on. So alpha of r is the one function I'm using, and beta of r is the other function. And you see for later convenience, I also put a 2 in here. This is because we're using basic quadratic forms here, and later on then the 2 drops out, so we don't have to carry a 2 around all the time. Yeah, so alpha and r and beta of r are now metric functions, which needs to be determined from the Einstein equation, metric functions. Good. So now with this ansatz, we go into the Einstein equation. So the recipe is as follows. Compute. Now, G mu nu is given, basically. We have two entries which are different from the vacuum. Basically, G00 and G11 is different. And now we have to calculate calculate the Christoffel symbols. And from then, you calculate R mu nu. And from them, you calculate G mu nu. Okay, and then put it into the Einstein equation we had above. So you get a whole list of equations. And I will write this down. G00 is then 1 over r squared. E to 2 alpha minus beta. I omit the argument here, but it's clear that these are functions. Times 2r beta prime. Minus 1 plus e to 2 beta. And then we have g11 is equal 1 over r squared, 2r alpha prime plus 1 minus e to 2 beta. And g22 is r squared e to minus 2 beta times alpha double prime plus alpha prime squared minus alpha prime beta prime plus 1 over r of alpha prime minus beta prime. Yeah, and then G33 turns out to be just given by r sine squared of theta times G22, so there's no new information for G33. So now we have three, basically, differential equations, and we have two unknowns, but we also have unknowns on the other side of the Einstein equation. And so we can determine everything. Okay. Good. So basically this one is then this then is proportional to the energy density of the fluid, and this one is proportional to the pressure of the fluid, and this one is also proportional to the pressure of the fluid. Yeah? Good. Questions?
Yes, the last one, G33, is just sinus, and then G22, or is there more? Is there
other things? No, there's not more. This is just background noise. Background noise. Yeah. Okay. So, exactly, so we can write this one from the Einstein equation. This is given by 8 pi g epsilon. This one is 8 pi g times the pressure. And this one is equal 8 pi g times the pressure from the Einstein equations. Yeah, which we had here. Which we had here, and the ideal fluid here at rest is given like this. Yeah?
G00
is equal 8 pi g epsilon, where epsilon is the energy density. Yeah? Good. Now we rewrite the metric function. We rewrite beta in the following form by saying that e to the 2 beta of r is given by 1 minus 2 gm of r over r to the power of minus 1. Yeah? So basically now this m of r is now our metric function, basically. Just rewriting the whole thing. But why are we doing this? Any idea why I use this fancy form here? Yeah?
Because it's basically the same form as the Schwarzschild metric, and we want to use that the metric has to be continuous at the border of the star.
Right, so if you look at r equal r, at small r equal capital R, where this is the radius of the sphere, we would see that this goes to 1 minus 2 g m over r to the minus 1, the Schwarzschild metric. And this would be the mass measured by a Newtonian observer far outside in the Schwarzschild metric. Yeah, Schwarzschild. Yeah, so we can immediately see that basically that m at r equal capital R is just the mass of the sphere. Yeah, note that when we're talking about masses, these are meant in a Newtonian sense. So we probe basically far outside in flat space-time, basically using Newton's law, what the corresponding mass would be. Yeah? There's no mass concept in principle in GR. Okay, so now we use this equation here. So we call this 1, 2, and 3. So equation 1 then goes over in the following form. If you look at the differential equation, you find we only have one derivative here. I didn't denote downward beta prime, is that the prime denotes basically derivative with respect to r. So beta prime, of course, means beta prime stands for d beta over dr and so on. And correspondingly for alpha prime and alpha double prime is the second derivative with respect to r. Yeah. So equation 1, you see that this equation only has one first order derivative, so we can immediately write this in terms of dm over dr. Yeah. And then we get the following differential equation, dm of r. Dr is just given by 4 pi r squared epsilon von of r. Now this equation might look familiar to you. This is basically the equation of mass conservation. Yeah. Yeah, so Newtonian, in the Newtonian limit, dm over dr for a sphere of a mass is just 4 pi r squared rho of r, where rho is the mass density. Yeah. So what is happening in gr is that we also have mass conservation. We just replace the mass density by the energy density of the system, taking into account all form of energies which matter has, not only the mass, but also potential energies, interaction energies, and so on and so on. Kinetic energy, yeah? This is all in here. And gravity couples to all forms of energy. Yeah? So this is a general rule that basically one replaces the mass density with the energy density. Yeah,
this,
question?
This was meant with mass coupling. One or 2 weeks ago, when talking about the equivalence principles, you said something about mass coupling. This is exactly this, right? Like not mass coupling, but coupling between gravitation and some other forces.
Yeah, this is exactly what I said in the introduction, that gravity couples basically to everything. Yeah. The mass concept somehow includes mass defects, the effects from mass defects from interactions.
Or equivalent to energy.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we can integrate that one. So if we integrate the above equation here, yeah, we find basically that m of r is equal 4 pi r prime squared, epsilon of r prime from 0 to r. Yeah. And then it also means that the total mass of the star, m, is then given by 4 pi integration from 0 to capital R, r prime squared, epsilon of r prime. Yeah, so this is the mass of the star. Mass of the sphere, to be more precise. Mass of the sphere.
Where did we lose the alpha in the first equation?
Where did we use the alpha? This comes from the fact that we're switching from lower to upper indices. Yeah. This is actually the expression we have for the upper index, and if we have the lower index, we get actually also this term on the left-hand side, which cancels out. So I have not been. So I have to rewrite it. So this is g 0, 0. And then this term drops out. Yeah, thank you. So we...
Yeah. Why does it drop out then?
It comes from the conversion from going from lower to upper index, where you multiply with the metric tensor. By multiplying with the metric tensor, you get these coefficients here, right? Thank you for pointing this out. And the same will happening then for the other equation. We get actually here, we get a factor e to minus 2 beta here. And then this is the upper index. And here we get a factor also e to minus 2 beta here. for the upper index. Minus theta alpha prime. Oh, this was already correct, actually. This was correct. R squared. This, of course, is a 1 over R squared. Otherwise, the dimensions are off. No, this was correct. No. This was correct. This is dimensionless. Looks to me there's a typo. Ah, good to know. There's an R squared. There's a typo in the manuscript. I need to correct this one.
R squared.
Good. Okay. So we have the first. This is actually the first of the TOF equations. So sometimes in the literature, people say it's the TOF equation. Or they say it's the TOF equations. The TOF equations means that one has to include also that equation in the equation we are going to derive. Yeah. Good. So there's one interesting aspect here if you look at this integral, that basically the volume in element we're integrating over is the same volume element we have in flat space-time. It's not the proper volume element we're integrating over. The proper volume element, of course, would include the effects from the metric. How can we see that? So basically, the volume element is dx times dy times dz. Right? So basically, we have to multiply all the prefactors here to get a proper volume element. So you will see when we integrate over a proper volume, we will get actually e to the 2 beta somewhere in the measure of the integral. But it doesn't appear here. There's no e to the 2 beta appearing here in the integral, yeah, which tells you that this is really a special kind of mass. It's actually the mass which takes into account that there's a gravitational binding energy involved in when calculating that mass. Yeah? So this is taken into account. So this, the mass we have here is just not a simple mass, but it includes also effects from curved spacetime in so far that we omitted the proper volume element. And thereby, actually, we get a lower value for the mass, if you do it correctly. And the rest is then the binding energy we have in the mass. So you can do the proper volume integral over the total energy density. You get the larger value of m bar. So m bar actually is the properly integrated volume element, 0 to r, dr prime, r prime squared, epsilon of r prime, times e to the 2 beta, actually e to the beta of r. Yeah, because this is dx squared, basically, and we have to take the square root, so e to the beta of r appears here. So this is larger. So this m is smaller than the properly integrated m bar. And this is the mass defect, basically, which now comes not from strong interactions like for nuclei, but this is the mass defect we have from gravitational binding. Yeah?
Which one is the one you would measure if you...
Yeah, good question. So which is the one we would measure?
A second ago, I thought the larger one, but I thought the first one would be the larger one, so now I'm a bit confused.
Hmm. Okay, any bet? Which mass do we measure? Yeah?
I think we measure the first one. It's a bit complicated because what means measurement in this context? So
yeah, what means measurement? Exactly. So we need a proper measurement. So what's the observer? What's the measurement? We need to define the observer and the observer frame, right? So what means measurement here? So we have a far outside observer looking at a sphere from the outside, doing a measurement, and what kind of mass will he find, or she?
Hmm. That see the binding energy, I think so.
You cannot see the binding energy.
I think so, you can see the binding energy. If it's in the energy momentum tensor.
Far outside, we only measure Schwarzschild. We only measure that mass. So we don't really have access to this one. For the far outside observer measures that mass. That's the real mass which is of physical relevance, which we can measure. There is another concept of the baryonic mass. When we discuss neutron stars, you can define a baryonic mass. But this comes from conservation of baryon number. We can define a mass by measuring somehow how many baryons are inside a star. And you say, OK, they are all composed of nucleons. And then we can define also a gravitational mass by counting the baryons and then compare with that one. So this is, in that sense, the gravitational mass. And the other one would be a baryonic mass if there are conserved currents or conserved quantum numbers. And that can be measured by other means, but this in astrophysics by processes when a star collapses to a neutron star, for example, and baryon numbers conserved, you can get a handle on this baryonic mass in addition. Okay, any other questions so far?
So the M bar would be the baryonic mass, right? The M bar.
No.
No?
No.
Okay.
No. No. As I said, you need to look at a conserved current. You have to make an integration not over the energy density, but the number density. The baryonic mass would be in between. Yeah. Okay, any other question?
Should it be e to the 2 beta or just
e to the beta? Because this is basically dx squared, and this is then only dx. Okay, if that's not the case, then we close the lecture and then